So the just a basic, we have to go back just to do a basic chazara just before we know how to kasher things, right? How do things become treif? So the same, it's the same phrases we've been using all along, but let's just do a quick chazara, like go over them quickly. So one is the idea that even if you don't have treif stuff in your cookware right now, so when it was cooked in it, or if you cooked meat in something and now you have a pot that is a meat pot, what it means, it took in the taste of the pot, right? It took in the blios, it took in these, it took in the taste. And that remains in the pots. And that's what makes something into a meat pot or a dairy pot or even a treif pot. Just to realize you need a transfer of heat to be able to have that, right? Otherwise, nothing makes in a meat pot if it was never used with hot meat or something that would transfer the taste. And the last factor is that taste is only a factor and something we're concerned about or something we worry about if it has the ability to give over a good taste, right? So that's within 24 hours. Within 24 hours, the taste in the walls of a pot still give over a good taste. After 24 hours, eina ben yomo, so after 24 hours means that no longer is potent, it no longer has the ability to give over its taste, and that leads to a lot of leniencies when let's say it comes out of the pot and goes into my food, so we don't count that as the taste itself anymore, and so it's not going to treif things up. There are exceptions. We talked about onions, that rejuvenates the taste, throws it back into its 24-hour period, so to say. But as a whole, the way things become treif is if you have the taste of whatever the food that you cooked, it goes into the walls of the pot, and now you have a kli, you have cookware, you have a vessel, you have utensils that took in either meat and dairy, or you had parv and it became meat and you don't want it to be parv, or somehow you cooked actual treif food in your kitchen and now you have a treif pot. It's less common nowadays. I was trying to think, like, how common is it that you actually have a treif pot from, let's say, treif food? You can have a meat and dairy pot, a basa b'cholov pot, that you accidentally cooked meat and dairy separately. It could also be that you accidentally cooked something dairy with meat, less likely. Most unlikely is to have an actual treif pot because of, you know, treif meat. I guess if a person went on to eBay or Craigslist and they bought a bunch of cookware from a non-Jew local, that could be.
Truth is, I do know some people who will occasionally peruse, like, whenever a restaurant's got a business, like, let's say if a restaurant goes bankrupt or there's a business, they'll have auctions and sell, like, high-quality restaurant-grade cookware and everything in the kitchen for really cheap.
Okay.
So I think Jeremy Levine one time bought a coffee machine, like some sort of, he's into coffee, so he bought some sort of coffee machine or something.
Okay, so it happens. No, but I guess that would be a place where it's applicable because I don't see most of us going next door to our non-Jewish neighbor saying, okay, so selling your pots? Like you go to the, what are they called? The sales outdoors that people have, backyard sales. No, yard sales, right? Usually you don't buy a pot. I guess you could buy a serving utensil or the like. So that would be a question because that's something that's probably treif. And then you have to know how to kasher that too. But okay, so that's the basic background. So let's start off with a few questions just to be able to frame it. So number one, a dairy spoon was used to mix chicken soup on the stove. How do I properly kasher the spoon? Yeah, I mean, this is definitely a treif spoon now. It's a dairy spoon. Is the chicken soup okay? So that depends if the spoon has been used in 24 hours or not. But we're not focusing on the food right now. We're trying to learn how to deal with the actual kalim, right? The actual cookware. So how do I properly kasher the spoon? It is now a spoon that has dairy taste and meat taste in it that is a treif spoon. How do I kasher it, right? What's the go-to kashering?
Hagala.
There we go. The go-to kashering is hagala. And we'll learn exactly why and exactly how to do hagala, but that's more of a basic one. Good. Okay, number two. I used the dairy ben yomo griddle pan to fry hot dogs. What's the status of the pan? Is if it is treif, is there a way to kasher it?
Griddle, okay. Like a fry pan?
Yeah, it's specifically they have ridges in it. Nothing special as far as kashrus goes for the ridges, but if you're going to fry a hot dog, you don't want the burn marks, right?
The grill pan?
The grill pan, yeah, the grill pan. Griddle pan, whatever it's called. So, So one, is the pan treif, and is there a way to kasher it?
So wouldn't you need Lieb and Gomer because it's direct heat and it's getting fairly hot?
Yes, so that's a very good point. So we're going to learn very soon, I'm impressed. We're going to learn very soon that there are different ways to kasher, right? There are different things that are necessary. So when it's in direct contact with a heat source without any medium of oil or liquid, so that's going to require a higher level of kashering, right? It's as if you're roasting it over a fire. It's direct heat source without going through anything else. We'll see exactly why that's the case that's worse, but yes. And three, I was sauteing onions and chicken in a pan when an onion flew out and landed on my dairy plastic cutting board. Yeah, this happens all the time. Maybe not the actual onion, but chicken. I mean, things fly around the kitchen. I mean, maybe my kitchen. I don't know about yours. But what should I do about the cutting board now? Right? Plastic cutting board. How do I kosher that?
Meaning but the onion probably was it sharp onion, non-sharp onion?
So it probably wasn't sharp, but it's definitely yatzo lettuce, though.
Right.
Right? It's very hot, has meat on it, definitely imbued with meat. Meat taste lands right on. Let's say even a piece of chicken fell out and landed right on. It's very hot at the point of contact. Definitely yatzo lettuce, but that little piece when it first hits. So now how do you kosher this? So I'll tell you one thing. You definitely don't kosher through Lieb and Gumor because that plastic is not surviving Lieb and Gumor.
Can you kosher plastic? You could kosher plastic, right?
So that's a question.
Is koshering even needed?
Is koshering even needed? So we assume, right, it's a good question, right? How does the taste transfer here? The taste would transfer because we generally assume something that comes directly out and is yatzo lettuce bo, so it maintains the heat enough to be able to transfer the taste. But we could change this case to be a bigger piece of chicken or even a piece of, you know, a liquid oil with it. In this case, I would assume that there is some transfer of taste.
So let me rephrase my question. The cutting board itself is only going to generally be used with cold things.
Okay.
So that's what
right.
I'm saying.
So
if you're not, let's say, going to be cutting onions on a regular basis, maybe, or something sharp.
Right. But l'chachila, can you do that? If that's the case,
that's what I'm asking. I don't know.
One plastic for meat and milk if you're cold.
So the reason why we don't have a plastic for meat and a dairy is for sure for Ashkenazim, because we generally assume, at least l'chachila and the chumra, that the point of contact between the knife and the board is a friction or a hard enough hit and point of contact that if I'm cutting, let's say, an onion or anything like that on that board, it could, at least l'chumra, transfer taste between the two. So if I'm using dairy and meat knives, the same things with the same board, it's something that Ashkenazim definitely avoid. So at least l'chadchila, it's something we would try to avoid. So l'chadchila, should we be kashering this? So probably, but now how do you kasher it? It will not survive a trip to the oven. Will it survive a trip into a boiling pot of water? Maybe. Depends. I guess we'll have to see, right? Maybe that's our next experiment, right? That and the pizza box in the oven. Okay. So let's see. Let's just see the sugya, the original sources here, and then we'll go into practically which ways we kasher, when you need to kasher, and which specific methods should be used. So we first have the pasuk in Bamidbar, Parshas Matos, I think. Ach es azav yes a kesef es a nechoshes yes a barzel es a bedil yes a ofaris. So you have all these different types of metals that have to go through a certain koshering process. The beginning is talking about tefillah, right? But we're not talking about tefillah now. The second part of the nechaf gimel says kol davar asher yavo be'esh taviro be'esh v'tar. Right, anything that went through fire. And we're talking about the non-Jewish kalim, the non-Jewish cookware that we acquired from the Midyanim, that we're now taking it into our own. So we have to kosher it in the sense that we have to do tefillah, we have to turn it into Jewish kalim, but we also have to kosher it because anything that went through fire, anything that was cooked on a fire by them with treif food, so it's treif. So if it went through fire, we have to now put it through fire again. Ah, v'meinida yischata. You also have to cleanse it with sprinkling water. V'chol asher lo yavo be'esh taviru b'mayim. Most importantly for us is that if it's not used in fire, meaning they didn't use it with an original heat source over fire, but they used it either cold or they used it through boiling water, so then it has to go through a process of cleansing through water. So automatically in the pasuk we see that there are different routes in order to cleanse, in order to kasher something that we acquire from the non-Jews, right? So what exactly are these different methods? So Rashi there, you know, you think we have to go to the Gemaras, we have to go to the Rambams. You know, Rashi, if we know Rashi al Torah, we're kind of set. So Rashi says in source 2 that af al pi shle hiser lachem Moshe el al hilchos tuma. Really, Moshe was only first talking about the rules of Tumah and Tahara, that if you have something from the non-Jews, or if you have it from the Midyanim, so it's going to be Tameh, and it has to be purified. But Od Yeshli Lahas Yer Lachem Al Hilchos Gil. Once he was talking about Tumah and Tahara, so then he also went on, and this extends to the laws of Gil, which is the cleansing and the purging and the kashering of all their cookware. The Ach Lashemiyah. And the word Ach only is to exclude, and to teach us as follows, that Mumaatim Atem Milhishtamish Bekelim. You're not allowed to use their cookware, Afilu Acher Taharasam Mitumasames. Even after you cleanse them from impurity, you're not allowed to use them, Ad Shi'itaru Miblias Isr Nevelos. You first have to clean them in a way that you're kashering them, right? There's many things going on. You have to turn them into Jewish Kelim by Tefillah. You have to cleanse them through the sprinkling so that they're not tame. But then there's a third thing that you have to do, which is to kasher it. V'rabosenu amru, ach esazav loymar shetzarich lahavir chaluda shalo kodim shigalenu. And furthermore, our rabbis teach that there are other things that you have to do to it, such as you have to remove the rust, you have to clean it. And so if you're going to be kashering, at least through hagalah, which is the boiling of the water, so it has to be pure, it has to be clean, the rust has to be gone. That's true when we're talking about the kashering, that's true when we're talking about tefillah, which we're not getting into now, right? So the first thing we see that Rashi is just expressing to us, it's clear these psukim are talking about kashering. And once we know they're talking about kashering, what are those different methods and what are the different requirements, right? So the second Rashi, at the bottom over here, really highlights, I would say, the min yisod, the whole point and really crux of the issue. And that is taviru be'esh. Anything that they used with fire, so now you have to pass through fire. Kederech tashmisho hagalaso. That the way it was used is the way it has to be cleaned. Another way to say this, and this is the key phrase, kabolo kach polto. The same way it took in the taste is the same way it now exudes or gives out the taste. And that means, ma shetashmisho oyde chamim, yagilenu b'chamim. So something that was used with heat, you have to clean it through heat. Uma shetashmisho oyde tzli, meaning boiling water before, and that which was used with direct contact of fire, like roasting, skigona shpud, vahaskala, the grill or the spit, yilbinenu ba'or. You have to do libun, which is essentially to incinerate or to heat it up to a point that's glowing. Right? So Rashi's already laying out the different rules. And that is that however you're going to kasher something depends on how it was used before. And however it was used before means the taste went in a certain way, and that means the taste is going to come out that way. Right? So there are three methods that essentially come out of that. The Mishnah in Source 3 in Avodah Zarah basically highlights the same thing as Rashi. We don't have to see inside. But essentially, there are three levels, right? That which goes through fire has to be cleansed through fire. So anything that was in direct contact through a direct heat source, not through water, not through any other medium of oil or water, so that requires libun gomer. So an example is like tongs on a grill, or a grill even, right? The grill is in direct contact with the fire. An oven itself, we really do view as something that technically, and we'll discuss, I think in this session next week, we'll get into all the different different appliances in the kitchen, if we don't tonight. But an oven, technically, you could imagine, would require Liban Gomor, because that's in direct contact with heat, the heat source, right? I'm trying to think of other examples of actual Liban. A frying pan, without any oil, without any medium between the food and the pan. So that's what you were saying before. So that's an exact exact heat source, mm-hmm. And so that would require this higher level of liban. So there are essentially three levels we're going to talk about, right? We've got on the top of it liban gomor, which means heating it up to the point that it's red hot, and that incinerates all the taste, that incinerates anything that's there. The next level is liban kal, which is a lower level burning, but we'll come right back to that, because the main two are the extreme of burning to the point that it's red hot, and then the other method is hagala, which means you're boiling. And that, the reason why it would work, is because if something was used with water, like, I don't know, I was cooking and mixed something with the wrong spoon, or I had a bowl, or I had a pot that I used the wrong pot for the wrong food, so the way you would get the taste out is the way the taste went in. And that was through water. That was through a medium of different liquids or the like. So then it would come out through boiling it as well, right? So that's, you've got Liban, you have Hagala, and you have another, which is Irui. So how, let's say something's splattered, right? So Irui is when something's poured. So if you have, for example, your sink, how do we kasher sinks for Pesach or in general?
Irui.
Pouring, Irui, right? Because how did that become treif anyway? Usually through pouring or setting down, or it wasn't through direct contact of fire. And if it was through boiling water, you weren't boiling water in the sink. It was through pouring water in or boiling food. So that's another option, which is Irui. But again, you can't use Irui to kasher something that needs Liban Gomer, right? Each of these have their own methods. You can always use a higher one for a lower one, right? You could technically, if something needs to be kashered through Irui, which is pouring hot water onto it, technically you could do Liban Gomer. I don't know why you would. Like, I don't know why you would take a blowtorch to your sink if you don't need to. It would work. It would kasher it, but that's not necessary. It
could be faster.
So you might think so.
Because I'm thinking time-wise, right? Because you don't have to wait 24 hours.
Yes. Right. We're going to get into that exactly now. It would be faster and time-wise, but it would be highly inconvenient and cumbersome because Liban Gomer, realize, Liban Gomer means, let's talk about it now, Liban Gomer is necessary when it was in direct contact with heat. So how do you do Liban Gomer? It means that you heat up the object in every, the cookware, in every single spot where it is to the point that it's glowing red. The other, you know, I think 900 degrees Fahrenheit, right? The other way they say it, until sparks fly. Most of our metals are in a way, are made in a way that sparks aren't flying off them when you heat them up to that heat. But still, it takes a while. One time I did it. One time I took a blowtorch to some grill pieces. It takes forever. You're sitting there and you have to keep it on the same spot for a good while. I forget, you know, it was probably around 30 seconds. I mean, you're holding it and you have to get every single spot to glow red hot. So try doing that to your sink. I don't know if your sink will survive, to be honest. But so usually something that requires a lower level, I mean, you could do the higher level, but you're not going to, right? The exception is that middle one, which is Liban Kal, which is a lower level type of burning. It's heating it where if you were to place paper or kash or straw onto it, it would light on fire, that type of heat, which we generally assume is anywhere from 450 to 550 degrees in the oven. Mm-hmm. The reason why I would do that is if I didn't want to do Hagala, because let's say it was impractical, there are other reasons, so I could always do Liban Kal. Liban Kal is kind of that middle one in between Hagala and Liban Gomer. It doesn't accomplish what Liban Gomer would need, or something that needs Liban Gomer, but would help you for things with Hagala, right? So let's take, for example, a few things here. So first of all, Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach, just to realize, we're saying the same way it goes in is the same way it comes out. So does that mean that the same way it went in, the same way it goes out, the exact temperatures, right? Think about it. It went in at a temperature of 300 degrees. So does that mean then I have to have it come out at 300 degrees and just the boiling point of water wouldn't suffice, right? So why not, right? And I think the Truma Sadeshin even talks about the whole idea of these higher levels of kashering is because we presume that the hotter something is, the farther it goes, the farther the taste goes into the cookware, right? It extends farther. So I have to use these higher level methods of kashering in order to pull them out. So we generally assume, Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach in Source 4 basically says that once you're accomplishing the kashering process, once you determine that this is something that needs this method, right? Once I determine that I need to do Hagala, so we don't say, well, it depends on the different degrees of Hagala. We say it has to reach a rolling boil and that's enough. And the same way, usually when it comes to an oven, if an oven needs kashering, and we determine it needs kashering through Liban Gomer, so it has to reach Liban Gomer, which is that 900 degrees, or the red hot, and nothing less will suffice. Even though I can tell you I was cooking at 450 degrees and nothing more. But whenever you reach whatever method is required, you have to do the proper method and you can't go based on the actual degrees. Occasionally it does help, and we'll see, for example, with our ovens. Okay, so good so far?
Right. I'm just going to have a couple of questions of specific things to kosher, but I'll wait to the end to turn to
okay.
the unspread.
Yeah. I want you to forget it, so
yeah.
Okay. So now let's just talk about the difference between Liban Gamor, Liban Kal, and Hagalah, right? And then we'll go into each of them. So with Hagalah, the way Hagalah works is it pulls out the taste. It draws out all the blios, all the taste that's been swallowed up in the cookware. It pulls it out, and that's different than Liban Gamor. Liban Gamor, this burning, this accomplishing this high heat, 900 degrees Fahrenheit, or turning it until it's red hot, that incinerates the taste. Any taste that's there is incinerated and no longer exists. It doesn't draw it out. It literally burns it where it is, right? So what's the difference? What's the practical differences? So one difference is I don't have to wait 24 hours to kasher through Liban Gamor. That's one difference, because the taste is being incinerated and I'm not worried about it coming out and going back in, right? When I do Hagalah, we're going to talk about this in a second. When I do Hagalah, I have a fork that was used with the wrong pot or wrong food. I have a pot that was used with the wrong food. I have to wait 24 hours since its last use to make sure that whatever taste I'm drawing out is not going to sit in the water and go right back in into what I'm trying to kosher. I wouldn't accomplish anything that way. So that's one difference. The second difference, and this is very practical, Hagalah doesn't take care of actual residue food on your cookware. If I have a utensil that's not perfectly clean, it has some meat on it, Hagalah is not going to clean that and it's not going to kosher that, right? It only draws out the taste that's in the actual vessel. Liban Gamor incinerates. Have you ever seen an oven after self-clean? It's fantastic. I didn't know I had a self-clean oven. So I got all the stuff for this Pesach. I got the easy off, I got the rags, and the day before I was going to go clean it, my wife said, "Why do you have all that?" I'm like, "What do you mean I have to clean the oven?" She said, "It has self-clean." I'm like, yes! That was the best day of my life, right? Self-clean oven, I don't sit there with the elbow grease and the easy off. So if you ever seen that afterwards, it's a little ash. Ash is left. It incinerates everything. So I don't have to wait 24 hours since its last use if I'm doing self-clean, which is Liban Gamor in most cases. And I also don't have to clean it out because it incinerates everything. Right? That's the practical differences between the two. Not to be confused, Liban Kal, that middle one, while it does incinerate all residue, as evidence when you burn something, it does burn the residue, it does not incinerate the taste. It's more like Hagalah that it's actually drawing it out. So if I do Liban Kal, I have to wait 24 hours. That's the general approach, okay? So let's go into the three exact methods and talk about how it's done. And yeah, okay, we'll see how it's done. So Liban Chamor, right? Liban Chamor, or Liban Gamor, which is the most extreme, where you're heating it red hot, 900 degrees. So that's going to be used when you had direct heat contact without in another medium. So you have grills, you have ovens, you have tongs that were used, you have pans. Okay. So besides for a blowtorch or self-clean, it's not usually practical. You don't really find a way to do this. Blowtorch is not something that's recommended in your kitchen at home. That's just not. Usually if something really requires Liban Gamor, usually people replace it. I guess people could do a Liban Gamor with a blowtorch on a grill.
Right, I've seen people take basically put in a bunch of coal in their grill and wait a couple hours.
Right, you could do that. You could do that, ensuring that the coal is high enough that the rack is sitting right above. And yes,
so I suppose if you could do. Rent Airbnb, is there a way that'd be the only way to kosher the grill on the deck?
Yeah, and even then there are some difficulties if a person is going to use a grill. So to use it open and bring their own racks, right? And yeah, I think so. We can, Mitzvah Hashem, I can get back to the exact specifics by the grill next week if we can. But let's, for example, Liban Gamor by an oven. So Liban Gamor, if you do self-clean, usually we accomplish Liban Gamor, 850, 900, depends on how hot these goes, the ovens go. Realize steam clean is not Liban Gamor. The ovens have self-clean. Sometimes you have these steam clean options. That does not accomplish kashering. And sometimes it might not even reach, I don't think it reaches even Liban Kal. So a steam clean is not a self-clean and would not kosher your oven, right? Generally, at least when we're talking about an oven that is from milk to meat or meat to milk, or for Pesach, if you don't have self-clean, we are lenient to allow for the for Liban Kal, the lower level one, because it's not imbued with a treif. You know, if you go to a new house and it was a non-Jew's house and they cook treif in it, that's already a discussion. But that's just to realize that even if you don't have self-clean, there is a way to kosher it and clean it out really well. Wait 24 hours because you're not doing Liban Gomer, right? Liban Gomer incinerates the taste. Nothing else incinerates taste. So you have to wait 24 hours since the last use. Clean it, put it on 450 or 550 for an hour, and that accomplishes cleaning the oven. Frying pans, that becomes more difficult. So the case that we talked about, right? Question one, was it question one? No, question three, question two, that is. The Ben Yomo pan, and I was frying hot dogs, if there's no oil and there's no water, so all of a sudden I have a pan that really ostensibly needs Liban Gomer, right? I don't know how expensive pans are. I haven't bought a pan since my wedding. Not that much. So in many cases, we end up throwing out the pan. That being said, it's always worth a call because there are other factors that would say it's okay, you don't have to do Liban Gomer. There are always other factors depending on what food it was. Was it heter food, meat into a parv pan or meat into a dairy pan? Was there some oil? These are all factors which maybe would say you don't have to do Liban Gomer and you could save the pan. So it's always worth a call. But realize that this is a bigger issue than just boiling a pot of noodles in the wrong pot, right? Okay. So that's Liban Gomer. That's on one extreme. The other is Haggalah. And the way we do Haggalah is as follows. First of all, when you're trying to draw out the taste, so if I have, we're going to use, for example, a fork. I have a fork that I need to kosher. I used it, it's a dairy fork. I used it with meat sauce on the stove. I mixed or a spoon. This is now a treif spoon. So what I have to do is I have to wait. I have to make sure it's totally clean because Haggalah is not going to clean it, right? There's dirt on it there's meat on it. Haggalah is not going to incinerate that or get rid of the actual residue. It has to be clean. That's one. Two, it has to be 24 hours since the last use. Well, hopefully you're not using it since you made it treif. So really it has to be 24 hours since the last use, which was when you made it treif. And the reason is because if I dip this into the pot and it's still within 24 hours, then I have treif taste going out into the water and ostensibly going right back in. So I didn't accomplish anything. So clean, 24 hours. You take a pot that's Eina Ben Yomo, because you don't, whatever that pot is, you don't want it turning this, the taste comes out of the pot into the water, into your spoon. So you use Eina Ben Yomo pot, or you could use a pot, whatever you're turning this back into, you could, right? But Eina Ben Yomo pot is always a good rule to use this. You get the water to a rolling boil. You make sure your spoon is dry. You drop it in. If you have a very large thing that you're trying to kosher, you can do it by pieces. It's not like tefillah. It doesn't have to all go in at the same time. You can do it piece by piece, making sure you get everything. And it should, you should keep up the rolling boil while it's happening. By the way, for Sephardim don't always require you to wait 24 hours. I think for the spoons, often especially you'll have 60 against it. Okay. So then what you do is you leave it in for a few seconds, you take it out and douse it with cold water. It's not treif if you don't. Everything still worked if you don't rinse it off with cold water, but Minhag Ashkenaz is to rinse it with cold water afterwards. And if you have something so large, like a large pot that nothing else is fitting into it, so how do you kosher that? Right, the Evan Malubin, the hot stone. I have never heated up a stone on my stove and dropped it into a hot boiling pot of water to kosher a large pot. It's not because I don't have large pots. It's because there's a much safer and I think easier method, and that is your large pot that you need to kosher, right? Take a small pot, fill it up with water while you're getting your large pot to a rolling boil, the one that you're trying to kosher. Boil water also in a small pot, okay? When both are boiling, take that small pot and just dip it into the large pot. It's heavy, it's taking up surface area, it's hot, it's itself has boiling water in it, and dip it in and allow it to fall into it enough that all the water from the large pot that you're trying to kosher spills over. Does that make sense? This is maybe where we need the visuals with the different pots, right? You have the large pot, you dip the other boiling pot, and essentially what you're taking is a hot yatsu lettuce bow boiling other pot of water, dipping it in, so it's not cooling down the water, it's maintaining the boil, and everything spills over and kashers the side of the pot, the lip, and that accomplishes kashering hagala, the larger pot that otherwise you would have a problem with. Handles also, by the way, even if you didn't trafe up the handle, as Ashkenazim, even Spartan for sure, but even Ashkenazim, if it's easy to kasher, dip it in. If it's plastic, you can always rely on, as long as the handle itself didn't get trafed, like you didn't see anything trafe up the handle, you just use the pot for something that you shouldn't have, so you can do Iru, you can pour on the handle itself. Okay, so that is Hagala, and that is Liban Gamor, and now Liban Kal. So the reason why we would use Liban Kal is really a replacement for Hagala, which is, remember, Hagala, everything has to be perfectly clean. So what do I do with pots or stuff that aren't perfectly clean? There's cracks in them, it's impossible to perfectly clean them. More importantly, pot lids, really hard to clean, right? So what do you do with that? Hagala is not going to work. Throw it in the oven, right? Usually the pots can withstand it unless they have plastic or maybe a Teflon coating. Those might have a problem.
Don't put Teflon.
Well, yeah, don't put Teflon in your oven. But if you have just a regular pan, a regular pot that's too hard to clean, it's too many cracks, it's not perfect. So instead of doing Hagala, you could do Liban Kal, and you could put it in the oven at 450 for an hour or for 50 minutes, and that would accomplish incinerating the actual residue, and it would pull out the taste that was stuck in the pot.
So apologize if I missed this. You're saying that Liban Kal does not require it to be perfectly clean.
Liban Kal does not require it to be perfectly clean.
Okay.
Liban Kal is useful when I have something that's, I can't do a gullah because it's not perfectly clean. Again, you should clean off what you can, obviously, but with the cracks and the stuff that you can, so Liban Kal would help you there. Okay, so just realize sometimes it comes up in discussion with pans and the like. Sometimes pans were used with some oil, some not. If pans were used with enough oil that wasn't, you know, it's sitting in oil. Like let's say you were frying schnitzel in oil. So does that count as Hagala, right? Or does that count as Liban Gamor? Okay, good luck doing Liban Gamor on this pan. So that's a case where we would say, okay, you can do Liban Ka, right? Because you had some oil. Which one is it? Is it Hagala? Is it Liban Gamor? Okay, we'll do Liban Kal, right? So that's the middle route. That's why I'm saying whenever you have a pan that you trafed up, it's always worth the call before you say, oh, that requires Liban Gamor, right? I have to incinerate this thing, okay? Always worth the call. Okay, so let's just, those are the three methods. And I know really, you know, this was the, so to say, the sugya part of this year. Yirtzeh Hashem, next week is part two, and then we'll get into the exact, I mean, any questions you have now we can talk about, but we'll get into the different utensils in the kitchen, the different appliances, and more importantly, or just as importantly, there are other things that, materials. What materials can or can we not kosher? Glass, plastic, wood, metal, right? Which ones can be koshered and which ones not? But let's just go back, just make sure we answer our three questions to start. So, the dairy spoon, and I mixed chicken soup, how do I kosher the spoon? We said it, start correctly, Hagala, right? It went in through the heat, the medium of water and boiling water, so I have to kosher it through Hagala. Wait 24 hours, make sure it's clean. Okay. The second one was the frying pan. That probably needs Liban Gamor. But if it happens to you, make the call. Because maybe you could save it. Depends. And the last one, I'm sauteing onions and chicken in the pan, and the onion or a piece of chicken flew out and landed on my dairy cutting board. How do I kosher that? So, based on what we said, it's not Liban Gamor, it's not Liban Kal, it's not Hagala. There's one option which maybe could help, Irui. Right? How'd this happen? This happened through something falling, landing, spilling, pouring onto the cutting board. So, most poskim would say, and again, we'll talk about plastic next week, but let's assume plastic can be koshered, or let's say we're dealing with a wood cutting board for sure, it can be koshered. So you could pour boiling water, you know, boil water in the kumkum, pour. Just realize when you, and this happens by sinks, koshering sinks. In order for Irui to work, it has to be boiling. Two, the area should be dry. But most importantly, it should be a direct, constant stream, right? If I pour and lift up the thing so that the water is just falling on its own through the air and hits, that's not direct, that's not connected directly to the original boiling water heat source. So when I'm pouring and kashering, there needs to be a constant direct stream as I'm going, and it shouldn't just be pour like that, right? That's how Iroi works. Otherwise, it breaks it, and we consider it cooled down enough that it doesn't kasher. So that's very practical when it comes to kashering sinks.
So Iroi, so before though, you had said with regards to Haggalah is that you could do it in segments. You're saying with Iroi, you should not be doing it in segments.
So Iroi you can do in segments, but every segment that you're doing as you're going along, and by the way, if you're kashering a sink, it'll take many boiling of water. So you can do piece by piece, but whenever you're pouring the water has to be a direct flow from where you're pouring. It can't be that I pour, here, let's use this for example. Thanks, David, for the props for this evening. Okay, here we go. This is how I would kasher with Iroi, right? Direct pouring, direct stream, that's always connected. That way, whatever water is coming out is always boiling and connected. Whereas, if I kasher a sink or this wood cutting board, so if I go like this, see how at some point before it hits, it's not connected? So then we consider the water that just hit there, it's cooled down enough because it's not connected to the original heat boiling source that's not going to kasher. So that happens a lot with sinks, kashering for Pesach. People do this, you know, multiple times over. So you can do multiple times. It just has to be constant, direct contact. Also, I don't want to do this on your table, but the bigger thing, I should have brought a plate. The bigger thing is when I'm pouring, so the place that I just koshered is where it initially hits right there. See that? The place that is not koshered through Iroi is the entire place that I just ran down. The place where it koshers is the initial contact with the direct stream of water. So it pays not to use a kumkum to kosher your sink because that'll take forever. Use a larger pot where the surface area where it's initially hitting koshers everything. That makes sense?
Right.
Okay.
One question I have just on... The other ones will say French because you go to a hotel, a lot of hotels have Keurigs. Now, I don't know if there's anything trait that goes into Keurig. I know that some of the maybe hot chocolates don't have a kosher
right.
on them. So do you need a kosher Keurig? If so,
is it I think I'll check into this, but I'm pretty sure the general approach when it comes to traveling in a hotel or something like that if you run a cycle before, and you should look and make sure the area where it sits is clean.
Mm-hmm.
And you can run a cycle through it beforehand, and then we assume that to be okay. That's presuming usually it's not treif. And if it was used with something treif, it's been, let's say it's been 24 hours, and there's been cycles through before. So if with all those fakers, with all those doubts to start, I think we can run a cycle through. Now, if it's at home, I think maybe we're more machmir and say you should do Iroi pour on the different areas. But yeah, I think that's a general approach when on the road and in a hotel for a Keurig.
Okay.
Okay? Any other questions?
Also, I had a lot of questions around microwave. We'll see that for next week.
Yeah, microwaves is a sugya, right? That's microwaves and Mirtz Hashem we'll do next week. Okay, so... Thanks, and again, as always, I don't want to hold anyone up, but if we have any other questions, we can go through those.